Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is currently the 20th of April, 2012 here in Japan. It is the 19th back in the United States, where I'm joined on the line by Eric Dreitzer of StopImperialism.com, a recent guest on Corbett Report Radio. So it's great to have you here on the Corbett Report website proper. So Eric, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Great to be with you. Thanks, James.
All right, Eric, I want to expand a little bit on the discussion that we were having on Corbett Report Radio the other night, where we were talking about some interesting developments in an area known as Balochistan, or alternatively known as Baluchistan, that spreads across an area that straddles Iran, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. And it's a very interesting area, a geostrategically important area, and one that's more and more in the news headlines. So why don't we get everyone on the same page and just talk a little bit about this area, where it's located, and why it's so important?
Sure. So Balochistan is actually this area that includes eastern Iran, western Pakistan, and a bit of southern Afghanistan. And this is an area of the Baloch people. And so this is actually a geostrategically necessary area, both for the United States and for China, depending, of course, on which way you're looking at the geopolitics. Balochistan is centrally located on that border region, so it's absolutely essential for any pipelines coming out of Iran that might be going into any part of Asia, be it Pakistan or India or China. It will go through the Balochistan region. We also know that there are what we can consider to be exceedingly large amounts of oil and gas are believed to be under the ground in Balochistan, as well as large mineral deposits. So for those reasons, it's, of course, important. And then there's the Chinese-funded port of Gwadar along the Pakistani coast there in Balochistan. And Gwadar is seen as sort of this linchpin of Chinese foreign policy, that is to say Chinese penetration into the Indian Ocean and Chinese exports coming out of Africa. So for all of those reasons, Balochistan is significant, not to mention the fact that Balochistan is an integral part of both Pakistan and Iran, an area that we've seen an increase in terrorism, as well as these targeted assassinations and disappearances. So Balochistan, although it doesn't make major headlines on a daily basis here in the West, Balochistan is absolutely essential for the Chinese and the United States.
Absolutely right. And for people who have been keeping their eye on the area, they'll know that there has been some interesting movements going on lately. And so let's bring in some of the latest developments. And specifically, we're talking, for example, about the Iran-Pakistan pipeline. And again, we were talking about this on the radio program the other night, but for the benefit of those people out there who didn't hear that conversation, let's talk a little bit about this pipeline and the background of it.
Yes, so the Iranians have been looking to build a pipeline into Pakistan for quite a while. And in fact, they had already laid some of the groundwork, some of the infrastructure for the pipeline years ago. So the Iranians are using this Iran-Pakistan pipeline, I think, as part of a comprehensive strategy to, I don't want to necessarily say outwit, but to get around the United States sanctions. One of the things that they're looking to do is they're looking to connect themselves, to intertwine economically with their neighbors. That would include India. We've seen massive increase in Indian importing of Iranian oil. That includes Iran's relationship with Pakistan. That includes Iran's engagement in Afghanistan post-United States. So from Iran's perspective, the pipeline is essential lifeline to a future, despite what the United States might want to do. On the flip side, Pakistan is in what I think we could consider to be an energy crisis. They have a shortfall of an extraordinarily large amount of energy, and they're looking for any way to make up that shortfall. So it's clearly mutually beneficial economic development, this pipeline. Now, we also know that there are companies ranging from China to the European Union that are trying to get in on this pipeline, either to finance or to build. And so really what we're seeing is, although it's the Iran-Pakistan pipeline, it is directly connected to the geopolitics of the Chinese, the geopolitics of the Russians, as well as, naturally, the geopolitics of the Western powers.
Exactly right. And so we have been seeing more and more indications in recent months of more overt Western influence and outside operations in the Balochistan area. Let's talk about some of those indications that we've been seeing.
Sure. Well, there's actually a couple of different aspects to this. So One aspect to the destabilization that we've been talking about has to do with terrorism, and I think that that's something that gets a lot of the headlines. And there's a few different forms of that. I think the first one would be the targeted assassinations. We've seen assassinations of prominent Balochi politicians. We've seen assassinations of police officers, military people. So that's one aspect of that. Now, what could we tie that to? I think we could tie that directly to the Baloch Liberation Army, which is, I don't want to say necessarily directly controlled, but it comes out of the orbit of London and the MI6 through a guy named Brahamdag Bukti and the Bukti family. We also have this Baloch Liberation Front, which, although it's a distinctly different organization, is similar, I think, in a lot of ways. And then the Jundala organization, which has been documented now for years as being part of this destabilization strategy that the United States has had vis-a-vis Iran. And Jundala operates in the Balochistan region as well, along these border areas, this quite porous border. So those are three of, I think, a number of other terrorist organizations that are operating in Balochistan, destabilizing the region. Now, the other thing that I wanted to mention is this Petraeus program. We had a report from March of 2011 from the Qatar Daily, the Peninsula, which reported that Petraeus had instituted a program of monthly payments of upwards of $500 to literally thousands of people in Balochistan, essentially creating a network of agents or spies or informants or however you want to look at that. So there's actually this sort of a multi-pronged effort to destabilize Balochistan for precisely the economic reasons that we were just outlining.
Now, of course, there has to be a type of false front for this type of destabilization campaign. Of course, the U.S. never comes out and says we're waging a destabilization campaign in a geostrategically important area. So what is that false front, and how is that being put forward to the general public?
Well, the general veneer, of course, is human rights. I mean, that's what we see all over the world, that the things are always framed in this humanitarian lens. But this actually has a couple of different angles to it. On the one side, here in the United States, we had this United States House resolution, which was sponsored by House of Representatives, Representative Rohrabacher from Southern California. And this was essentially a House resolution that was supporting the notion of Balochi separatism, or self-determination, as they phrased it. And this, of course, they come up with all sorts of reasons having to do with Pakistan's mistreatment or maltreatment of Balochistan or whatever pretext they come up with. But at the end of the day, the result is the United States is supporting breaking apart a piece of Pakistan and breaking apart a piece of Iran and breaking off a piece of Afghanistan to create a greater Balochistan. That is the grand strategy from the United States perspective. But coming back to what you were asking, the way in which they're able to do it, human rights. We had this human rights outcry all over the world. I guess it was about 3 weeks ago now. We saw this protest out here in New York outside of the United Nations, basically protesting the targeted killings and these assassinations and disappearances. But sort of what was, I guess, less in the headlines about that had to do with the fact that these were organizations that were put out there here in the United States to raise up an international outcry about the human rights in Balochistan, the same way we saw with Libya or with Syria or with Uganda or any other propaganda campaign to try to legitimize a military and or covert operation.
Exactly right. So on the other side of that table, there are, of course, the SCO countries, including most notably China and Russia, who also have an interest in the region. And of course, we talked about China's interest in the port of Gwadar. So let's talk a little bit more specifically about how they factor into this and into the pipeline project itself.
Well, the Chinese have had this long-standing strategy, what's called the String of Pearls. And the String of Pearls is this strategy where the Chinese are able to basically guarantee their sea lines of communication or their trade routes going all the way from China through the South China Sea, up through the Strait of Malacca, across the Indian Ocean to Africa. And the String of Pearls was part of this strategy to create a series of ports and other commercially viable locations along that route that would basically guarantee the Chinese access to oil and gas imports as well as other imports that they have. And Gwadar was the centerpiece of that strategy. Gwadar is a multi-billion dollar port along the coast of Pakistan that the Chinese have heavily invested in, and really the Chinese see as central to this entire strategy. There are other ones that the Chinese are involved in. We recently have heard about Sri Lanka. There's a new port coming up there. There's a port that they're trying to put in Myanmar. But at the moment, Gwadar is the centerpiece. Gwadar is the sort of the eye of this storm. And so it is essential for the Chinese. I mean, this is not something that they're just loosely trying to protect. This is absolutely essential to the Chinese. Now, the Russians, of course, are also directly involved in this. You mentioned SCO. The Russians are involved in a number of different projects related to Balochistan. One of those important ones is called the Kasa 1000. And this is an electrification project, essentially bringing electricity from Central Asia and from Russian territory down through and into Pakistan. And so the Pakistanis are not just having a shortfall of energy in relation to gas and oil, they also are in need of electricity. So the Russians have a directly are vested in what's happening in Balochistan as well. So the SCO, I think, understands that Balochistan is central to everything that's happening, but at the moment, they're not out fighting in the headlines quite yet.
And I understand that there's some new developments on in terms of the financing and perhaps the development of that pipeline project. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, up until very recently, the plan for the Pakistan-Iran pipeline was going to be that it was going to be a consortium of Chinese company as well as a Pakistani company that were going to work together to finance this. To finance a pipeline is actually complex because these pipelines are international. They're international lifelines, really. They go through multiple countries. So there's the issue of transit fees. There's the issue of credits because you can't, you know, the Pakistanis can't pay for it in Pakistani currency while the Iranians in Iranian currency. So it becomes complicated. And I think that some of these complications have led to the Chinese stalling on this. But the Russians are now seemingly big players here. We had a headline today, actually, this morning from Bloomberg. Pakistan seeks Russia's help to finance Iran gas pipeline. So if the Russians get involved in financing, the Chinese will certainly not allow themselves to be cut out of this. We also know that there are German companies and other European companies which are bidding for the actual construction of this pipeline. So it's really an international effort. The Russians, the Chinese, the Europeans, and then, of course, on the other side, the United States trying to prevent it.
Exactly right. So, of course, we don't have a crystal ball and we cannot predict where things are going to go from here. But given the sense of how these two forces are lining up in the region, what can we reasonably expect to come out in the next few months here?
Well, I think that we're going to see a continued demonization campaign of Pakistan. The United States wants the world to view Pakistan as something close to a failed state or a rogue state or something. We saw that this offensive in Afghanistan, the U.S. is immediately blaming their favorite bogeyman, the Haqqani Network, and the Haqqani Network is U.S. intelligence establishment speak for Pakistani ISI. So they want to blame the Pakistanis for what's going on in Afghanistan. They're going to want to blame the Pakistanis for what's happening in Balochistan. And so from that perspective, you'll see a continued demonization of Pakistan. From the Iranian side, the Iranians are not going to wait around for Pakistan to get their act together to actually lay the pipeline. So the Iranians are looking to diversify their position now. With regard to the SCO versus NATO, I don't think that we're looking at something that's on the verge of a military conflict. However, I think that there will be this continued campaign. And in fact, I would just add here, I think it's likely that Balochistan would be a much more volatile issue if the situation in Syria had been resolved. Had the United States and the Western powers been able to wrap up Syria as quickly as they would have liked, I think they might then have set their sights on Balochistan, but it seems that Assad, as well as, of course, Russia and China, have thrown a wrench in those gears. So I think all of that is important. Now, in the near term, we know that the target is 2014, the early part of 2014, for the Iran-Pakistan pipeline to really be pumping the gas into Pakistan. That coincides with the United States leaving Afghanistan. So I think that what you're going to see is a build-up to 2014 where the United States is going to attempt to subvert this pipeline as much as possible to prevent it while they have a foothold there in Afghanistan. Because at this point right now, it looks like the two main players in Afghanistan post-U.S. withdrawal are going to be Pakistan and Iran. And so I think that that is really the crux of what's coming in the next year, year and a half.
I think so. Certainly 2014 is going to shape up to be one of those times to keep our eye on as the transition takes place, or supposedly is going to take place. But for people who are interested in following this region, as you indicated, it's not something that's really prominent in the headlines in Western media. What sources do you recommend for people who are interested in keeping their eye on this?
Well, I try to follow the Pakistani news sources as much as possible because they do an excellent job of reporting on it. And in fact, it's what the reason why I recommend the Pakistani sources such as the Pakistani Tribune, the International Herald Tribune, the Express. The rest of them are not coming to me immediately, but they're all loaded in my computer, so they come to me automatically. But the Pakistani press is the best on this issue because they realize that this is of existential threat to Pakistan. It's important for people to remember, too, that to break off a piece of Pakistan is to destroy Pakistan. Pakistan and the unity that exists in that country will not survive a dismemberment of Balochistan, and that's precisely the goal of the Western powers, because the whole point is to destroy Pakistan to prevent a pipeline going into China. At this point now, the Iran-Pakistan pipeline is already a thorn in the side of the U.S., but for it to be an Iran-Pakistan-China pipeline would completely change the dynamics of international relations for the foreseeable future. So for that reason, it's, of course, essential. Now, news sources, I think, the specific source is less important. I think what's most important is in understanding when you look at Western sources on Balochistan, get ready to hear a lot about human rights, get ready to hear a lot about the disappearances and the assassinations, all of that important. But when you read the Pakistani sources, you realize that out there, they actually place it into a much larger narrative, one that includes the Raymond Davis killings and the drone bombings and the Quran burnings and all of the other provocations that the United States is responsible for. So from the Pakistani perspective, Balochistan is just the most recent in a series of provocations.
Well, a very important part of the geopolitical puzzle in that region, and I think one that's only likely to grow in importance as we continue out. So for people who are interested in keeping their eye on this, of course, I would also recommend StopImperialism.com, which has a very, very thorough podcast on this and a lot of other geopolitical issues. For people out there who aren't familiar with your podcast, tell them a little bit